Very good. So it's so good 8 o'clock now. So I mentioned yesterday night that today's talk will be on the obstacles of meditation, especially the hindrances and a few other things. But first of all, that some people have already mentioned in the questions a term called the monkey mind as an obstacle to meditation. And there is such a thing as a monkey mind, but many people misunderstand exactly what is a monkey mind. So in my latest book, the Don't Worry, Be Grumpy, Good, Bad, Who Knows, I told the story of the real meaning of the monkey mind. And it goes like this. There was the big festival day of Vaisak over in a big temple in Sri Lanka somewhere many years ago. And when there's a big festival day, many, many people come and they bring lots and lots of food, just like they bring at Bodhinyana over the road. And because as many people came, obviously many birds come to see if they can find something to eat. And also, being Sri Lanka, the monkeys came as well, to see if somebody could drop a banana or they'd drop a mango, and that would be their lunch. There's always lots to eat for the monkeys during festival days. So one monkey had gone to the temple on Vaisak day, not because he was Buddhist, but because he was hungry. And he was waiting for someone to drop something, and the monk was giving the sermon, giving a talk. And he heard the monk talk about monkey mind. And because he was a monkey, he thought, this is interesting, I wonder what the priest is going to say about me. So he went to the window and listened intently to the Dharma talk, and what he heard made him really angry, because the teacher was saying the monkey mind was a bad mind, a terrible mind, the sort of mind which no one should really entertain, and you should strive hard to do something to get rid of the monkey mind. And the monkey was really offended. How can these Buddhists sort of say a monkey mind is bad? Monkey minds are good. I'm a monkey, I've got one, and I'm proud of my monkey mind, said the monkey. He said, I'm not going to stand for this. And so he was really upset of being defamed. He went back into the middle of the forest and told all his friends. And all those monkeys, a whole troop of monkeys, they got really upset. What right are these human beings, you know, to think a monkey mind is bad? Monkey minds are okay. That's discrimination. You shouldn't allow these things. That's offensive to monkeyhood. And they're all jumping up and down. And their leader, who was old and wise, and said, that is what the monkey mind means. Look at you. All jumping up and down, making a big noise. And all the monkeys thought, oh my goodness, they're right. Human beings are right. Being a monkey, you have to have a monkey mind. And that's a lot of suffering. And so they all got depressed and suicidal. When the leader of the monkeys said, but hey, I have heard, I've been to that temple as well, looking for a mango on Vaisak day. I've heard that if you meditate, you can overcome the monkey mind. So all the monkeys, they had hope. They started jumping up and down. Yeah, let's meditate. Yeah, woohoo, we're going to meditate. Ooh, 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 let's meditate. And everyone said, but how do we meditate? And they all got very still again and sad. And one of the other monkeys said, look, I've watched them. What you've got to do is get a nice cushion, and then you've got to sit down quietly and watch your breath. So they said, yeah, let's all meditate, let's all get a cushion. So they all went into the forest, they got leaves, they got grass, and made really nice cushions for themselves. They really enjoyed that. And then the monkey who had seen some meditation before, now you've got to sit down on the cushion. So all the monkeys sat down. They got right leg over the left leg. Right paw over the left paw. So they all put their right paw over the left paw. Back straight. So all the monkeys went perfectly straight. Chin slightly tucked in. And watch your breath. Breathing in, breathing out. And that was the first time in history that monkeys ever meditated. The forest hadn't been that quiet, ever.
only for a minute. And then one of the monkeys put their hand up and said, excuse me, in the middle of the meditation. I've been thinking. Do you remember that early this morning we planned to go to the banana plantation and raid that plantation because all the bananas are nice and ripe and bring it back into the forest for lunch? And the other, yeah, I've been thinking that too. Yeah, me too. Look, let's get that out of the way first of all. Let's, you know, raid the banana plantation, get all that work out of the way. Then we can sit down and meditate without having to think about things. Yeah, said the monkeys. They jumped up and down off their zafus. Yeah, let's go and raid the monkey, the banana plantation. Yeah. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I'm not going to do that again. So they all swung off into the banana plantation and they stole loads and loads of mango, bananas, and they brought them all back into the clearing in the forest where they live. They didn't eat them yet because it wasn't lunchtime. They just got that out of the way, get the preparation out of the way so they could meditate. Then they all sat on their zafus in the middle of the forest, right leg over the left leg, right paw over the left paw, back straight, heads down, close their eyes, breathing in, breathing out. And once again, the forest was silent. Excuse me, said another of the monkeys. You know, I was thinking, before we eat those bananas, you know, they all have to be peeled, first of all. So why don't we peel the bananas, first of all, get it out of the way so I don't have to think about it? Yeah, I've been thinking the same. Yeah, let's do this, said all the monkeys. So they got off from their zafus and they peeled all the bananas. They never ate any yet. They just peeled them because you've got to get that out of the way, first of all, so you don't need to think about it. And they piled all the bananas in the middle, all nicely peeled, so they wouldn't have to do anything before lunch. And then they all got back on their cushions. Right leg over the left leg, right paw over the left paw, thumbs touching. Head down, close your eyes, meditating, breathing in, breathing out. Breathing in, breathing out. Just watching. Excuse me, said another monkey. And everyone opened their eyes. I've been thinking, said the third monkey. Before we eat those bananas, we have to put them in our mouth, first of all. Let's get that out of the way. We won't eat them, we just put them in the mouth. It's not lunchtime yet. So yeah, they all said, what a great idea. So they all got up from their cushions. And they all got a banana each, put it in their mouths. Of course, there's somebody, a couple of monkeys put two bananas in their mouth. You know what it's like, go and see the lunchtime on the buffet. You know who those monkeys are. One monkey put three in his mouth. But they didn't eat it yet. So with the bananas in the monkey's mouths, they went back on their cushions, sat down, right leg over the left leg, right paw over the left paw, back straight, chin tucked in, closed their eyes. And what do you think happened next? When everyone's eyes were closed, they ate all those bananas. And they never ever did meditate. Because now the time for meditation was over. Now that is called the monkey mind. Let's get this out of the way first, and then I'll meditate. Let's just, you know, have this cup of tea, then I'll meditate. Let's go for the walk, then I'll meditate. Let's get my chores out of the way, then I'll meditate. Let's, you know, wait till the kids leave home, then I'll meditate. Let's wait till I retire, then I've got time, then I'll meditate. Let's wait till I die. And that is the problem with people. So with meditation, is patience, but it's also the type of patience, and I have figured out there's two types of patience. It's the second type of patience. The first type of patience is waiting for something to happen. It's waiting in the future. That's also part of getting things out of the way, first of all, then I'll do something. Sometimes we wait in the future, and you know that's a big obstacle for your meditation, especially those of you who've had some good experiences. And you're waiting for it to happen again. Those of you who've got lots of trust in my teachings, and you say, well, no, Ajahn Brahm says, if I keep doing this, I get delightful breath, the body will disappear, and I get these lights, I get bliss, and you're waiting for it to happen. If you're waiting in the future, waiting for something to happen, that's not patience at all. That's craving. that's wanting. So please never wait for something to happen. You'll just get frustrated. And people sometimes they complain to me, look, I've been doing everything you said and I haven't got any jhanas yet. I haven't got any lights. I can't even watch my breath. You haven't been doing what I said. You've been wanting something to happen. Don't want anything to happen. That's waiting in the future. Instead, wait in the present moment. Just be here and enjoy and relax in this moment. It's never going to come again. Wait here, not in the future. So the whole idea of wanting something to happen, demanding something to occur, expecting beautiful meditations, that's all called waiting in the future. That is an obstacle to meditation. It's craving, it's wanting. Because when you're waiting for something to happen, you're not really looking here, you're not mindful here. And it's like you're at the bus stop. Instead of enjoying the bus stop, you're looking down the road. Where's the bus coming? Is it coming yet? You're not actually in the present moment. I was very happy to see someone sent me some photographs of Montreal. And there's a couple of people from Montreal here. And in the bus stops, in the central part of Montreal, they don't have normal bus shelters or seats where people can sit down to wait for the bus. What the local council in Montreal have done is just absolutely brilliant. They've put swings by the bus stop. So people can sit in the swings and swing backwards and forwards like in a playground while they're waiting for the bus. And what a wonderful thing that is. So you can enjoy yourself before the bus comes. And apparently you see these buses photographed, business people in a suit, the secretary, all dressed up, swinging backwards and forwards. They enjoy it so much when the bus comes, I'll get the next one. I'm having too much fun. Can you imagine that, just having swings at the bus stop? What a brilliant idea, a bit of fun in life. So we wait in the present moment and enjoy this moment. Put fun into this moment. And if you put fun and enjoy this moment, the obstacle of waiting in the future disappears. Why are you waiting in the future? This moment's good enough. But that's one of the problems with people. We always think that happiness will be somewhere in the future. If we do the meditation right, if we listen, if we put forth effort, if we get up early, if we do this and do that, eat the right food, exercise, sleep enough, then it's all going to happen in the future. And that's missing the whole point. One of my favorite stories, number two, this is story time. This is, some of you have heard this so many times, but what do you expect? You keep coming every year. The story of old monks don't lie. Because there was an old monk. And it's a tradition, being a monk or a nun, that sometimes you go wandering. You leave the monastery and you just wander the roads and forests of places like Sri Lanka or Thailand. In this case, India. Wandering from place to place. Now, with no home. Stay a while, meditate there, except during the rains retreat, the wasa, where you have to have a place to stay because it's too wet and stormy. It's the monsoon season in India. So the Buddha said during the rains retreat, that's why we call a rains retreat, you have to stay in one place. So this old monk had been wandering around and he came to this poor farming cottage for alms round one morning. And the farmer happened to be a really devout Buddhist, and his wife too. So he gave the monk some food, and he said, "Monk, have you got anywhere to stay for the rains yet? The retreat is only a few days away." And the monk said, "Actually, I haven't found a place to stay for the retreat yet." So the farmer got on his knees and said, "Venerable sir, please stay with me. There's a beautiful meadow by the river not far from here. And my wife and I are so happy to look after you and feed you every day. We'll build a nice little hut in the meadow for you. We'll look after you. We'll only ask one thing, that you come every few days, to teach us some Dhamma, to help us with our meditation, and maybe talk to our children." I had two small children. You know, give them some teachings, some stories and stuff, so they get uplifted. And the monk said, certainly, I can do that for you. And so they built him a very simple hut. Monks are very easy to look after. When the monks first went overseas from Ajahn Chah's monastery, they went to England. And when they went there, the committee of the little organization said, can we afford to look after monks? So one of the people there, he was an economist. He actually was on the board of the Bank of England. He's a professor at Reading University, Colin Ash. So he's an economist, so he decided to work out, you know, how much it costs to look after a monk. So they know what they're up for. You know, if you commit to looking after a monk or a nun, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg, you know, you can't afford it. So you know, he had to be responsible. So he did some calculations and he worked out a very interesting finding. He worked out it's cheaper to look after, say, a nun or a monk than to look after a dog. So the conclusion, because dogs, you know, they definitely have to take them to the vet, you know, feed them, give them a little hut. There's lots of similarities there, because little dogs live in huts, so the monks and nuns. You know, the dog eats out of a bowl, so do we. And the dog, you know, you just pat them and they wag their tail, so do we. We're very easy to look after. Just take them for a walk in the morning and you're fine. But it's actually cheaper to look after a monk than look after a dog. So, every home should have one. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Just a little hat in the back there and you've got a little monk or your little nun in there. Whenever you want any sort of TLC, you just take the monk out and just wag the tail. Teach you some dharma, some nice jokes, then you can put them back in the kennel and they're happy there for the day. So he said they could afford it. So it's not, doesn't cost that much to look after a monk. So they were very happy looking after this monk. And he was teaching them for 3 months. And after 3 months, they got really attached to their monk. You know, the farmer just loved him. Not just the wisdom, but where it came from. It's just so kind and generous. And he just brought so much happiness into their lives those 3 months. And even the children, they got to love him. He was like a grandfather to them. This beautiful, wise, kind person. They could play tricks on him and he would just laugh. They would tell him jokes, he would tell them jokes back. This is all I end up doing with the kids in Nolamara. I told this once, if you get this one, it's, I can prove you're not here. Shirley, I can prove you're not here. Are you in New York? No, you're not in New York. Are you in London? Are you in San Francisco? No. Are you in Toronto? That's where you live. Okay, if you're not in Toronto, you're not in San Francisco, you're not in New York, you're not in London, then you must be somewhere else, correct? And if you're somewhere else, you can't be here. Proven. That's a kid's joke. So as a monk, it's good to have some kids' jokes so you can play around with with the kids. So, even the kids love this old monk. And they also had a dog. And even the dog liked the old monk. It's just his character and his kindness and softness. Even the dog always wagged its tail when the monk came by. So when, after the rains retreat, the monk told him, it's time for me to move on. I'm a wandering monk. I don't stay in one place. So tomorrow I won't come for alms round. I'll be on my journey again. And the husband, the farmer and his wife burst out crying. And the kids wailed. And even the dog put his tail between his legs and whined. And they didn't want the monk to go, but he had to. But he said, you've been very good to me. And my meditation has been better than ever in the beautiful hut you built for me. So good that I've actually seen some things which I want to share with you. He said, not far away, much closer than you think, there's a huge buried treasure. I want you to have that. And so actually, it's amazing, just no matter how sad you are, when you win the lottery, that was just about as good. They stop crying, yeah? What? He said, but you have to follow the instructions perfectly to find the treasure. Yeah, we'll follow the instructions. What do we have to do? And he said, following morning, you got to stand at the doorway of your house at dawn. You got to face the direction where the rising sun comes. And take up your bow and arrow, which you use for, you know, hunting your farmer. And point the bow and arrow in the direction of the rising sun. And as the sun rises completely above the horizon, let the arrow fly. And where the arrow falls, there you will find the treasure. He said, I guarantee that because I'm an old monk, and old monks don't lie. So they were sad he was going to go the following day. They're also excited because being a poor farmer is a very hard life. And they realize the next day they would be rich, comfortable, and they could relax in life. So the following morning they were up really early, way before dawn, for excitement. They waited till dawn and they picked up, their husband stood in the doorway of his house, he picked up the bow and arrow and he waited and waited and waited for the sun to rise. And when it finally rose above the horizon, he pointed the bow and arrow in the direction of the rising sun. He shot that arrow. And where they all ran after it to find out where it fell. The kids and the dog, the wife, had to carry the spade, because this was India a long time ago. You know, the husbands give all the orders and the wives have to do all the work. But there's karma involved if you act like that. So, where the arrow fell, the husband ordered his wife to dig a hole. And she dug, and she dug, and she dug, and what did she find? You've heard this before. Nothing. Only trouble. Because that... I know you've heard this before, but I love telling the story. And it fell in a land belonging to this rich merchant. And the rich merchant caught them and said, you can't dig in other people's land. That's against the law. And I've got a good lawyer. I'm going to take you to court and sue you for all your work. I'm going to take your farm and everything. You've destroyed my land. And the wife said, not my fault. My husband told me to do it. And the husband, not my fault. This old monk. He said we find a treasure here. And at that, the merchant said, old monk? I'm a Buddhist too. And old monks don't lie. There's no treasure here. What did he tell you? Now when the husband told the instructions, the merchant said, I know where you went wrong. Look at you. You're a weak farmer. You don't eat properly. You've got no muscles on you. You can't shoot a bow and arrow. I'll tell you what, said the merchant. I will shoot that bow and arrow tomorrow morning. And do the deal. We'll split the proceeds 50-50. I'm a merchant. And now that's all I can do for you. Or go to court. And so the farmer said, okay, deal. So the following morning, the merchant was there at the threshold of the house with the bow and arrow. And he knew he'd find something because old monks don't lie. He had total faith in this old monk. And as the sun rose, the merchant stood standing in the doorway of the house, pointed the bow and arrow in the direction of the rising sun. When the sun came totally above the horizon, he shot the arrow. It went much further because it was much stronger. He ate better. And where it fell, he ran after it, the farmer ran after it, the wife ran after it, even the kids went, and of course the dog went too. And where the arrow fell, guess who had to dig the hole? The husband. That's the karma. If you get your wife to do dirty work, next day you'll have to do the dirty work. And that's fair, it's karma. So he had to dig this big hole. He dug and dug and dug, sweating all over. But what did he find? Nothing, only more trouble. Because this time, the arrow fell in a field belonging to the general in the army. And he came along with his soldiers, saw them, and he said, you can't destroy my field, and told his soldiers, cut the head off. And the farmer said, it wasn't me, and it was the rich man, he told me to do this. Cut his head off as well, said the general. No, it's not me, it's this old monk. He said, we find a treasure here. And at that, the general said, put your swords away. I'm a Buddhist too. Sort of. You know, even the generals, they still want their weapons blessed and all sorts of ridiculous stuff done. So, I'm a Buddhist too. So what did the old monk say? Because old monks don't lie. And when he heard the instruction, he said, look, it's obvious where you've both made mistakes. You're lay people. You don't know how to shoot a bow and arrow. You've got to be in the military to know bows and arrows. Look, he said, the deal is, tomorrow I will shoot that bow and arrow. I'm trained in archery. I'm a military. I'm a general. And we'll split the proceeds three ways. And no one will find it, because old monks don't lie. So the following morning, the general was there, together with the rich man, the farmer, the wife, the two kids, and the dog. And his dog came up. The general picked up the bow and arrow, stood at the doorway of the house, and as the sun got above the horizon, he shot the arrow, and that went a huge distance. He was a soldier, he was trained. And they all ran after it. The rich man, he was puffing away because he was fat. The farmer, the wife, the kids, and the dog was enjoying himself, going for nice runs every morning. And where the arrow fell this time, the rich man had to dig the hole. And he dug, and he dug, and he dug. And what did he find? Nothing. Only much more trouble. Because this time the arrow fell in the garden belonging to the king. Well, that was big trouble. Because the king had them all arrested, including the general. And he brought them into the court and said, destroying the king's property is a capital offense. I will have to execute every one of you, including the dog. Oh, poor dog. And the dog whined, and the whine meant, it's not my fault. The general said, look, it's not my fault. This rich man got me into this trouble. The rich man said, it's not my fault. It's this farmer was saying all sorts of lies. And the farmer said, it wasn't lies. I got this from this old monk. He said, we'll find a treasure. And at that, the king said, did you say old monk? Yeah, the old monk. I'm a Buddhist too, said the king. So, what did the old monk say? And the king couldn't work out where they made any mistake. But no, he said, this is really strange. I want to get to the bottom of this. So the king said, I'm going to put you all in jail for the time being, including the general, and especially the little jail for the dog. I'll look after you until I find that monk and find out what's going on. So he put them all in jail, and he sent out for that old monk. And soon they found him. They brought him back to the palace. And the king said, you've got all these people into big trouble. Why? The old monk said, because they didn't follow my instructions, Your Majesty. I don't lie. I'm an old monk. Old monks don't lie. They never follow my... Where did they go wrong? Said the king. He said, Your Majesty, I'll do a deal with you. You come to that poor person's house tomorrow morning. You follow my instructions. And I want the general, the rich man, and the farmer and his family and the dog to come as well. And I guarantee you'll find the treasure tomorrow morning. And the king said, okay, deal. But if you don't find the treasure, I'll have to execute you as well. Okay. So the following morning, they were all at the house waiting for the sun to rise. And the king was standing in the doorway. And he turned around to the monk. Am I standing in the correct position? Yes, said the monk. Well done. And then he picked up the bow and arrow. Yes, correct, Your Majesty. He faced the rising sun. Correct, Your Majesty. And as the sun was about to rise above the horizon, he pointed the bow and arrow in the direction of the rising sun. Yes, correct, Your Majesty. And just as the sun just completely rose above the horizon, he was about to shoot the arrow, and the monk said, wrong, Your Majesty. What? Said the Majesty. What am I doing wrong? Your Majesty, I never told him to shoot the arrow. I said, let it fly. And the king understood. He let go of the arrow, and the arrow fell right down between his feet. He let it fly straight down. And there they dug a very small hole, and they found this huge treasure, enough that even the dog could eat out of a silver bowl. for the rest of his life, let alone everybody else. And the moral of that story is, if you want to find the treasure of peace, bliss, of meditation, nimittas, jhanas, enlightenment, if you want to find that treasure, which I promised you, let go of the arrow of wanting. Stop shooting it. Over there. Over there. Now I'm going to meditate. That's shooting it into the future. Let it go. And where it falls, which is right where you're sitting, right in this moment, there you'll find a treasure enough to satisfy you for the rest of your life. And that is true, because I am an old monk now. And old monks don't lie. I love telling that story. The punchline is brilliant. Can you understand your problems in meditation now? Shooting arrow over here, the arrow over there. And you think you can shoot the arrow, get stronger, get wiser, train yourself to meditate. If I train myself like the general, then I'll be able to get my treasure. You don't need to train yourself. You don't need to be strong. You need to be wise and follow the instructions. Just let it go. And right here, right now, you'll find a treasure greater than your wildest dreams. That's how it works. So I'd spent a long time on that story, and I like telling it because it's profound. And because it's a story, people like hearing it. I like telling it, and you remember it. You can tell it to your friends and your kids and stuff. There's a nice little, very deep Dhamma in there. So a lot of times when we're waiting in the future, we're shooting the arrow in the future. It never happens. We've got to really be right here. And if you really get into the present moment, all the obstacles in meditation, they usually disappear. You have to have the future to want something. You have to, you know, this is actually where the arrow is going to go. There's no future. How can you want anything? How can you desire anything? Have some perception of where you want to go to. Meditation, we don't have any concept of where we're going to go to. All we have is the concept of where we are right now. Just now, that's all, nothing else. And where you only have that concept, the arrow has to fall right here, where you're standing, where you're sitting, where you're eating, where you're going to the toilet, right here. That's where you find the Dhamma. So when you're meditating, no future, no past. I'm not going to wait in the future. I'm not going to wait for something to happen. What's happening now? That's the only thing I'm concerned about. What's happening now? What's happening now? I'm not trying to change anything. I need the future for that. But just now, just now. Straight away it means you don't do anything. You can't do anything. You're just here. And you wait in this moment, patiently. And little by little, the meditation happens. And actually the path of meditation is a simile which, you know, I've developed as a simile of the lotus flower. Now the lotus is a great symbol of Buddhism. We've got one over there. And it's the thousand petal lotus simile. A lotus is closed at night time. And if you look at that lotus at night time, the outermost petal is always rough, dirty, because it takes the wind and the dust of the day. And it has no fragrance to it. It's got no color to it at all. It's rough, serrated. But when the light, the sun rises in the morning, when those first rays of the sun hit the outer petal of the lotus, it warms it up. The warmth and the light from the sun opens up that outermost petal. And inside is the first real layers of petals of that lotus. White and with a bit of gold, you start to have some fragrance. It's beautiful inside. And because the outermost petal is opened, that allows the light and the warmth of the sun to hit the next layer of petals. So they open up. And the second layer of petals inside is even more beautiful and more fragrant and more thin. And that receives the light and the warmth of the sun. That opens up. And the next layer opens up. And the next layer opens up. And the deeper you go into the lotus, the more beautiful are those petals. the more their perfume is just so delightful, and the thinner and more subtle are those petals. And that is a simile of meditation. The warmth and light of the sun stands for kindness. That's the warmth. And the light, the mindfulness. The mindfulness and kindness, being aware and caring. Not going anywhere. Staying this moment, just being aware and being kind. And your mind is a lotus. It opens out. On the outside, the outermost layer of petals is all rough and dirty, because it has to withstand all of the stress and the turmoil and struggles of your life. But inside, you get into the beautiful petals. I like telling these stories, this simile, in prisons. Because those guys I see in prison, the rapists, the murderers, the thieves, they're so rough on the outside. But I know they're lotuses. You open them up, and you've got some beautiful fragrant petals inside. And these are supposed to be rejects of society. No, it's just on the outside. You open them up, and it's gorgeous what's inside. Same with you. You think you're hopeless. Just stay in this moment. Stop wanting things. Stop shooting the arrow of craving here all over the place. And allow the warmth and the light of mindfulness to open you up. It does open. Ooh. The body is relaxed. It opens up. And you go to the world of your mind. It's got past and future, all these thoughts. Don't fight the thoughts. All these things you think are obstacles to meditation, they're important for you. It's the attitude is the obstacle, not what you're aware of. So don't try and get rid of things. Don't try and want things. Just allow awareness and kindness to stay with what you have now. And that will open your mind to the next level. It just happens. So you're sitting there just watching your stupid old mind. And the thoughts of the past or the thoughts of the future, they vanish. You don't try and get rid of them. You're aware and kind, that's all. And awareness and kindness, you relax, you rest, and you come right into this moment. And that's a very beautiful layer of petals. And so, you know, what am I supposed to be aware of in this moment? It doesn't matter what you're aware of, as long as it's in this moment. Right now, it might be the sound of somebody snoring. It may be the sound of somebody farting. And I always will say to people that if you do have problems with your digestion, you pass a lot of wind, please, out of kindness for everybody else, sit at the back. So there's no one behind you. So all those problems with people with wind problems, you must sit at the back. And so now, you know, no, all the people sitting in the back. Why this? So, sorry. Whatever you're aware of. Just be aware of it, be kind to it. And then it opens up, and you go inside. You go inside the present moment. You know what's right inside the present moment? The present moment layer of petals, when you go inside, it's actually silence. You go so deep in the present moment, there's no time to think, to say anything. You can't comment on anything. You're right in this moment. Have you ever listened to classical music? I used to love classical music. And one of the reasons why is you had to stay with every sound. And you could not sort of go off into the future. You couldn't linger into the past. You had to be right here in every moment. And, you know, you may have gone to a concert, a brilliant concert. Now, I used to like, really weird, Monteverdi was one of my favorites when I was at Cambridge. But, you know, you listen to that, and if you made a comment, you know, turn around to your girlfriend, oh, that was really good, wasn't it? You get kicked out. Because when you made a comment, it meant you weren't listening to the music. You were making comments and disturbed everybody else. So when you are listening, you had to be in the present moment, and you're also silent. if ever you're listening to really fine music, or you know, you're watching the sunset, you notice when you're really into this moment, you're silent. So right in the center of the present moment is a silence. So it just opens up, just because of mindfulness and kindness, you're silent naturally. And then what happens next in this middle of the silence that opens up? Inside of that is the breath. Let's say it's the only thing moving. So you're really silent, you're not doing anything, just being aware and being kind. And then you realize you're aware of the breath. It's always a nice breath at that time. And so what do you do? Nothing, you're just being aware, being kind in this moment. And then the breath gets really, really full. See the beginning to the end of the breath, not just breathing in, breathing out. From the very beginning of the in-breath, all the way to the end of the in-breath. Seeing the gap between the breaths all the way from the beginning of the out-breath to the end. It just happens naturally, you don't do it. Just the petals have opened up. And the deeper you get, the more beautiful it is, the more happy it is. And it gets into the next layer of petals, a delightful breath becomes so soft. It's so the full awareness of the breath, it becomes a delightful breath. It's just so wonderful, just watching this breath. Another layer of petals has opened up, and these are such beautiful, fragrant petals inside. The delightful breath. You're just watching that delightful breath, just being aware, being kind to it, not wanting anything in the whole world. And then that opens up into the beautiful lights in the mind. The delightful breath vanishes, and inside is beautiful lights. Now, it's a very good simile at this stage, because there's a common problem, obstacle in meditation. For those who get to this stage of meditation, sometimes they can see a light, but they're also aware of their breath. They don't know which one to go to. It's like the petals have opened up, but not fully. You can see the outside petals, you can see the ones inside. The nimitta is the inside, the breath is the outside. What should you do? And it's always the answer is just be aware, be kind. And if the awareness and kindness is strong enough, the light and warmth of the sun is strong enough, it will open up the petal. If it's not, the petal will close. You can't do anything about it. Just be aware, be kind. Sometimes the light will just vanish, and you just go back to the delightful breath. Just carry on being aware, being kind. And sooner or later, it happens automatically. Then the whole petal will open up, and you've got this beautiful light inside. So what do you do? It's always, and this incredibly beautiful petals in the heart of the lotus. And another nice thing about this story is that those petals are in each one of you right now. You've got the nimittas inside of you, you've got that bliss, you've just got to uncover it. You don't need to get rid of something to get something else. It's right there. Stay where you are. This present moment, let go of the hour of wanting something more. Stay here and allow it to open up like the lotus. And you get so incredibly surprised that you get these experiences. And when people first get these experiences, they say, what, me? I'm just an ordinary person. My first retreat, I'm not a particularly good person, or maybe just, well, you know, just everyone else does it, I do it as well. You think that you can't do this, and you can, and it's mind-blowing. You're sitting there, you know, think, I can't meditate. And then you get these beautiful lights coming up and just bliss out. Because they're all in every one of you. You don't have to be a Buddhist, Christian, Hindu, a member of ISIS. You know, they've all got nimittas inside of you. If you just sit still long enough and stop firing your weapons. So, inside of that is this beautiful light. And you just stay with it. Mindfulness and kindness. And it opens up. And right inside you get these incredible jhanas. Types of petals you never knew existed. Exquisite. And just so fragrant. Blows you away. And sometimes people, when they get into these jhanas, they say, well, how do I go from one jhana to another jhana? Because there's a lot of them. You just stay wherever you are. Mindfulness and kindness. And the petals open up inside the first jhana. That opens up. There's the beautiful petals of the second jhana. That opens up. Third jhana, opens up fourth jhana. You have the time. Sometimes people say the time of your life. That is wrong. The time of your many lives. We have many lives in Buddhism. And this is one of the best of all of your lives. this is one of those memorable experiences of hundreds of lives. Johanna's, wow. So that's how it happens. And that simile of the lotus is really helpful because it gives you confidence. You may be this rough old person on the outside. All your problems, your traumas, all of the pain of your life, the difficulties, the struggles, your diseases, your addictions. And there's all of that here. But inside is this beautiful, beautiful petals of the lotus. You just need to be in this moment, mindful and kind. And you open up. It's a wonderful thing to see that happen. See the human being open up and see the beauty inside of these gorillas, you know, inside of themselves, and they realize that for themselves. Such a wonderful thing for a teacher to watch. The opening of your lotus. And there you go, that's all those obstacles. You know, the hindrances, the real hindrances, I should say this, because talk about the hindrances. Now I'll say what the hindrances are. The hindrance is the first is wanting something. You know, greed, desire, chandaraga, wanting. And it's quite obvious. The other one is ill will, which is exactly the same thing, just the other side of the coin. When you want something, you want to get rid of something. So I want to get rid of my sloth and torpor. I want to be awake. I don't want to be dull and bored. I want to have that bliss, which Ajahn Brahm said. So when you want something, it means you don't want the thing you've got now. You want something else in the future. It's always ill will and craving. It's always what just keeps moving the mind, stops it being still. It gives it more business to do. So what are you getting ill will for? Getting angry, complaining. A total waste of time. You're not going to change things. You know, sometimes people get angry at me telling stupid jokes. But it's not going to change things. I'm conditioned. I'm sorry. I can't change at my age. Well, they want you to be different. You can't be different. You are who you are. So instead of this place here, you know, we put so much energy and money into this place, and people can still complain. In fact, it doesn't matter how much money you put into it. We can turn this into a resort. I know a few really mega wealthy people. I can get them to turn this into like five-star resort. Now think about it. Your rooms can have their own air conditioners. And instead of having these little beds, king beds, and imagine this, room service. Wouldn't it be wonderful to just ring the bell and somebody comes and gives you a massage, you've got a sore back. And instead of just, you know, just this buffet, you know, you can have whatever food you like. You know, you people are not vegetarians, you can go and order a steak. You know, and, or you can just order just your favorite food because, you know, sometimes, you know, this Asians here would like sort of hoppers in the morning, string hoppers, you know, just from your favorite restaurant. And or you can order, you know, your Singapore porridge. You know, just think about it now. And you just order it with and have like a menu, not just the, you know, just take it or leave it. But you know, a real menu with professional cooks, five-star cuisine. Imagine we can have a resort, retreat center like that. And instead of actually, you know, having to come here, you know, you get picked up in the buggy to come here to actually to meditate. And every little place in this room has its, you pull down the cord and your own little air conditioner comes in. And not just one monk to service everybody. You have your own personal meditation trainer. Your own monk. 24 hours a day at your service, just for you, no one else. If you feel down, he can come and tell you a joke. If you've got a little problem in meditation, you can get access to him immediately. You don't have to queue up and put your name down his blooming list. And if I could do that, you would still complain. The string hoppers are not quite spicy enough. They're not hot enough. Because in life, it's never good enough when you have hindrances. Can't be. Your dear husband, never good enough. Doesn't matter how much he tries. Your wife, never good enough. Why can't you look like Angelina Jolie?
because you don't look like Brad Pitt. So we always have this stuff. So when you've got hindrances, you can't enjoy. And this is a very quick teaching, very powerful. It's what in the, one of the quotes in my quote books. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. That's Four Noble Truths in one line. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. And people have worked so hard all their lives, they've got so much, and they can't enjoy it because they're busy working to get something more. Such a shame. And how much do you need? Yeah, you can actually keep working, but at least spend a day just enjoying what you have. You worked so hard for this. You've got a house, enjoy it. Stop making it better or cleaner or putting on additions. Want to go up in the market? I'm going to sell my small house, get a bigger one. Sell the bigger one and get an enormous one. Sell an enormous one and get a gigantic one. And it was crazy. So what more do you want? Yeah, you can actually do that, but at least spend a day of the week, or at least an hour, at least 5 minutes of your life enjoying what you've already got. This is good enough. And that is when you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. When you're happy with what you've got, you have incredible happiness. You're at peace. So that's why the first two hindrances, wanting or not wanting, that stops you being happy. Stops you being peaceful. I'm not saying you should do that all of the time, but when you're meditating, no wanting. After you finish meditating, then have your desires. For example, if you need to go to the toilet, don't let go here. Want to go over there. So when you meditate, just totally sort of no wanting, I'm just happy to be here. With whatever type of mind you've got. You're tired, you're restless, you're crazy, you're dull, you're frustrated, you're bored, you're running up the wall. Great. I don't want anything more in the whole world except just to be me. With my stupid, dull, tired mind. You try that. The hindrances go. And your lotus, boom, 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 starts to open up really quickly. And you don't realize, wow, this was a stupid, dull, boring old me a few minutes ago, and now I've got these incredible hindrances. What's going on? When you don't want anything, all these things, they just happen. It's contentment. Content upon content upon content, and you go really deeply in. And that's the first two hindrances. The third or fourth hindrance is dullness or restlessness. Now, the trouble with dullness and restlessness, I had dullness big time when I was in Thailand, and I would fight it. I thought that effort was going to get me through this. Sometimes it did. Sometimes all my sleepiness vanished, and I couldn't stop thinking. Think. Okay, come on, calm down the thoughts. Settle down, let go. And the mind stopped thinking, and I fell asleep again. And you're always between those two, dullness and restlessness. When I looked at the dullness, first of all, now I look back upon that, it's just, how stupid can a person be? I was born in England, okay? Now, a nice, cool country. And I was now in the jungles of Thailand, no air conditioners, no fans, no electricity. It was hot, it was humid. I wasn't used to that. No, one day we went to Bangkok and I was doing some visas and I stayed in one of the temples and they had an air-conditioned room. We got up at 3 o'clock in the morning because no one was using it at that time to meditate. No dullness at all because the climate was nice and cool. And these things started to make me think. Number two, in Thailand, I say we got up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Getting up at 3 o'clock in Thailand was optional. You could always get up earlier, but no later. I used to go to bed 10, 10:30. You only get about, I was told I should have 4 hours sleep at night. But I cheated, I had 4.5 usually. I couldn't get less than 4.5. So, and you meditated in the morning, I was sleep deprived. And number three, I told you the food you used to eat, frog and rice. And it was just, I was malnourished.
malnourished, you know, sleep deprived, in a climate I wasn't used to. And I say, you know, with respect to what even the Buddha, if he was born in England with that, he'd have got tired too and got sleepy. It was just total physical stuff. And after I realized that, I said, no, have an aircon in this room. You know, have comfortable places where you can sleep. Good food, because that's important to overcome dullness. Simple thing like sleeping enough, resting. Because a lot of your dullness is nothing to do with you. It's not because, you know, you're lazy. People in the West are so highly motivated, and each one of you is so highly motivated. You get on this retreat. You know how hard it is to get on these retreats? The last one just booked out in 7 minutes. You have to be motivated. So you've got enough motivation. But if you're dull, it's just because you're tired. So take a rest. Eat well. Have cups of coffee, whatever you want. Because then you get the physical thing gone. And the other reason is that, you know, because we may not be physically tired, we're mentally tired. You've been working your brain so hard. So you've got to give it time to relax and recuperate, which is doing nothing. It's hard for me to teach you to do nothing, but at least you'll be doing much less in the last few days. So your brain actually starts to wake up and the sleepiness starts to go. But if you fight the sleepiness through willpower, you're just encouraging more doing. So when the dullness goes, restless, 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 you slow down that type of doing and just go to sleep again. You find the middle way between sleepiness and dullness just by relaxing. And then your mind is just perfectly poised. And the next thing to overcome the sloth and torpor and the restlessness is developing the perception of happiness, joy. Be grateful for this place. Beautiful food, nice rooms, a great sort of people looking after you, nice nature, great teachings, brilliant jokes. Well, maybe we won't say anything about the jokes. But at least, you know, be grateful for what you have. And then you're happy. We've got something in Buddhism. I saw this, the fault-finding mind. I won't go into too long, because I'm way over time already. Two bad bricks in the wall simile. You all know that story. First wall, I saw two bad bricks, and I wanted to destroy the wall. All I could see is faults. I couldn't appreciate that wall. Until somebody said there was 998 good bricks there, and when I could see that, it was a nice wall. It showed me how to find happiness. Because a lot of times, we always see the faults. The faults in you. I'm a terrible person. I'm hopeless. I'm supposed to be a monk 40 years and this is all I can do, tell the same old stories and jokes every time. I'm hopeless. I might as well kill myself. I might as well go off and get a proper job. It's so easy to get into that negativity because you just see your faults. So don't see the faults. See all the incredible stuff you've done. The beautiful place we built here. A lovely community. Amazing, just, you know, you are just an incredibly wonderful person if you see the whole picture. If you just focus on one or two bad faults in life, tragedies like someone's death, if that's all you focus on, you don't see the big picture, you get depressed. So, two bad bricks in the wall, sees the happiness in life, sees the beauty and all the incredible, wonderful qualities in you. You're a human being. This is actually a high realm in Buddhism, the human realm. There's many, many lower realms, and you're not in the lower realms. That means you're pretty high quality. And the fact you've come to a Buddhist retreat, that means you're really high quality. The fact you've come to a Buddhist retreat with Ajahn Brahm, that means you're way up there. So you're nice people. So, what that means is you're happy. You'll find happiness with things. When you're happy, you find happiness. You're not bored. I don't know how anyone can be bored in this place. There's such beautiful bricks to look at. Wow. There's beautiful skies to look at. Birds, trees, flowers, kangaroos. So much stuff. But you know, it's amazing how people can get bored. I can see them just... I've seen this before when I visit people's houses. They open up the fridge. Nothing to eat. And it's packed. They turn on the TV. When I was a kid, you had two channels, BBC, ITV in London. Now there's, how many channels have you got on Foxtel? 60, 80, 100? Nothing on TV. Are you kidding me? 80 channels? You can see it doesn't matter. So if you've got a mind which is dull, it will get bored with anything. But if you have wisdom, you can find fun with anything. See these great kids sometimes that they take a stone or they take a stick and they can make just a whole afternoon of pleasure out of something simple. Why can't we do that? What we do is take this mind and have a beautiful afternoon of pleasure just watching this crazy old little mind and playing with it. So then we can find the happiness in things. You will find gratitude, no fault finding. That is also overcomes the dullness of the mind and the boredom, the negativity. And you really start taking off in meditation then. So be careful of the obstacle of the fault-finding mind. That leads to so much of all the other four hindrances, wanting stuff, ill will, dullness, and restlessness as well. All comes from fault-finding. So look at this world and you say, good enough. This wonderful little teaching, good enough. You're meditating here, I'm a bit dull today. Please say that to yourself, good enough, this is good enough. Be content with this. And that contentment will open up your lotus really quickly. This last little story, because I'm going to do the interviews. One of our members, she was visited England recently, the West Country, and now she's getting really old now. So she was visiting some of her husband's old friends. They used to be working in Malaysia, you know, with the before independence. And so, you know, these old colonials. And this friend was in hospital last parts of his life. You know, cancer, incontinent, both ends. Had to get, you know, the nurses to wipe his bum after he went to the toilets. And there was no quality of life, he thought. He got really depressed. And when I went to visit, you know, he said, I just want to kill myself. You can imagine how that is, you know, when a person is in that age and everything is falling apart. And because this was one of my disciples, she said to him, come on, you know, this is a beautiful place you're staying in. People are so kind here. You get nice food, you get a warm bed, and you're clean all the time. You know, for this age, it's good enough. She kept on saying to him, good enough, good enough. And he got it. Yeah, you're right actually, it is good enough. And so, you know, he was peaceful. And he died 2 days later, naturally. And she was so happy that, you know, in his last 2 days of his life, he understood good enough. That's a beautiful story. And even if he's old, dying, incontinent, cancer, so-called no quality of life, we would say, but he was good enough. People being kind to him. Good food, a nice, clean, warm place. Good enough. But when you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. And you die sad, depressed, angry. So this is good enough. It's brilliant teaching. So when you're meditating here, this is good enough. Sitting here, I'm really stupid. I'm hopeless. No way I will ever get enlightened. No, this is good enough, though. And then the enlightenment comes to you like a train. That's what happens. Okay, so that's the obstacles to meditation. How easy it is once you understand them to overcome them. So I expect you all to be enlightened by lunchtime. Because of these amazing teachings. But actually, no expectations. I don't really need you to be enlightened because you are all good enough.